Well, thanks very much for that kind introduction. I'd like to start off by also thanking the organizers for inviting me to speak at your annual conference this morning. I'm also pleased that you asked me to speak about industry, government, university partnerships, because while partnership is certainly a buzzword, you might say it's almost a cliche these days, I'm a really strong believer in collaboration as a way to expand Canada's research capacity. And I'll say a little bit about the particular context for Canada in a few moments, but I want to emphasize that one of the fundamental reasons for collaboration is that many of the major advances in science and engineering technology these days are taking place at interfaces, and those kind of advances require a multidisciplinary team approach to research and problem solving. So today what I hope I can do for you is to take a closer look at some of the partnership models that have been developed recently in Canada. I think you'll find that we've developed a broad range of partnering approaches for a whole host of reasons, such as not just tackling research problems, but developing R&D infrastructure, building up the skilled workforce, or promoting technology transfer and commercialization. Over the last 3 years, I've had the opportunity to interact with the heads of research agencies of all of the G7 countries. We meet once a year. And although it came as a bit of an initial surprise to me, I can assure you that Canada has actually been very innovative in developing partnership programs, particularly between universities and industry, but also, for example, between the National Research Council and the private sector. Now, I think it's important to stress that while we have in many ways served as a model for other countries, to some extent this particular behavior has been driven by necessity as well as by our own inventiveness. And I want to talk a little bit about two research and development gaps which Canada has. One of these is called a strategic research gap, which is caused by weak industrial investment in medium to long-term strategic research, and an innovation gap, which is identified by the OECD as the result of our failure to adequately commercialize the technology developed by government and university research establishments. Now, the strategic research gap, which is shown, it isn't shown here per se, but I'm going to talk about this this trend in a minute. The strategic research gap is a historical lack of industrial investment in medium to long-term research of a strategic nature in Canada. And of course, this is in part a result of our industrial structure. We've had a resource-based branch plant industrial structural mentality in Canada, and we do not have a very large number of major industrial labs that invest in medium to long-term strategic research. We don't have the IBMs, the DuPont Central Research, the AT&T Bell Labs, unfortunately that's broken up now, that many of the major industrial countries do. Now, if we look at the 30-year trend data, you can see in Canada that the trend in percentage of the GDP invested in research and development by funding sector, this is the government curve and this is the industry curve. You can see that while industry has been increasing, government investment in R&D has been going down. So the net effect of this has actually been essentially a straight line. You can also see, I think, by looking at the next slide, that if we compare ourselves to the other G7 countries, over the last 30 years, Canadian industrial investment in R&D, Canada's down here, the other G7 countries are up here. Canadian industrial investment in R&D is considerably lower, and the gap between us, even though industrial R&D in Canada has been increasing, the gap between us hasn't really narrowed. Now, if you look at the specific figures for specific comparisons for Canada with two other major trading partners, Japan and the United States, you can see this even more dramatically. The difference is very clear that Canadian industry is clearly not investing anything like what our major trading partners are. And you can make similar comparisons with Korea and Germany, for example. Now, if we look at the other problem, and what I'm going to try to tell you is that from that strategic research gap, partnerships, collaboration are very crucial to Canada because, first of all, they help increase industrial investment in R&D and they help lever industry's resources. So it's perhaps even more important in Canada than it is in the other countries. Now, if we look at the other gap, the innovation gap, we need to look at how we spend our R&D dollars. And this is a plot which starts off from large R and small d at the left-hand side, basic research, and here it's development. And of course, everybody knows that most development work is quite rightly done in industry. Much of the fundamental basic science and engineering is carried out in universities. And in Canada, as I've mentioned, in the middle here, strategic R&D, we don't have that many large companies that are major players. In fact, we don't have many large players in medium to long-term research at all. Apart from Nortel, which is, of course, a very major investor, we don't have a very large number of players. So this illustrates the role which government labs, such as the National Research Council, can play in bridging this gap between the universities and between the development that is carried out largely in the private sector. Now, it's clear that if we're to close the innovation gap, we also have to be able to link these various players together. We have to link the university community to industry, and we have to have organizations such as the National Research Council in many ways serving as a bridge between these two areas. So partnerships are crucial to ensure that basic research is transformed into commercial products and wealth for Canada. So in the particular context of our country, networks, joint programs, partnerships, centers of excellence, those things which link universities, government, and industry have been very successful because they not only produce high-quality science and engineering, they also stimulate significant interactions between universities, government labs, and industry, and they help to ramp up, as I said earlier, the amount of industrial R&D. Now, before I take you through some case studies and some examples, I'd like to say a few words about my organization, the National Research Council, and why partnering and collaborations are so important to us. NRC was created as an advisory council to government in 1916, more than 80 years ago, and the mandate that it was given was to undertake, assist, and promote scientific and industrial research in the national interest. In other words, to help solve mutual problems of scientific and industrial research through cooperation. And ever since the beginning, when NRC was formed, it's actually been involved in bringing people together, organizations together, to solve research problems. The problem of wheat rust on the prairies, for example, was largely solved by NRC convening a conference, bringing university and agricultural researchers together to work on that problem. The difficulty of the deterioration of concrete structures in Western Canada was also solved by providing funding for partnerships between universities and industry. So over the 80 years of NRC's history, partnerships have been a very significant part of what we've done. It's enabled us, it's helped us to be flexible and also to respond to Canada's changing needs. These days, NRC has laboratories and facilities across the country. We have 16 research institutes from St. John's in the east to Victoria in the west. We also have a very successful industrial research assistance program called IRAP, which is recognized in the G7 as being the most successful program of its type for involving small to medium enterprises in research and development. A third component of our programs is the Canada Institute for Scientific and Technical Information, which essentially is the national library in science, engineering, technology, and medicine, with a comprehensive collection, these days focusing very much on the delivery of information to the desktop by electronic means, and focusing attention, for example, on the concept of the virtual library. In every one of these cases, whether it be the research institutes, IRAP, or SISTE, we view collaboration and partnering as a fundamentally important principle of the way we do business and of our success. About a year ago, we enunciated a new vision to the year 2001. This is after we'd gone through significant budget cutting and restructuring as a result of Program Review 1. And this vision is to be a leader in the development of an innovative, knowledge-based economy through science and technology. It's very much based on wealth creation and prosperity for Canada through science and technology. There are four elements to the vision. First of all, we will remain dedicated to excellence in advancing the frontiers of scientific and technological knowledge in those areas in which we decide to invest. This, of course, has been one of the major features of NRC since its early days, excellence and relevance. But we also don't try to do everything. We carry out focused research in key areas that we consider of importance to Canada, and we work in collaboration with industrial, university, and government partners to develop and exploit key technologies. So we have a limited number of areas. It's not a scattergun approach. In those areas where we do invest, we expect to be the best in the world and to be competitive with the best research organizations in the world in those areas. The third element is to provide strategic advice and national leadership to integrate key players in Canada's system of innovation. Now, this means that you have to understand innovation and recognize that R&D in isolation doesn't really help, but you have to have a number of other components. You have to have education, you have to have finance, you have to have marketing, and you have to have companies involved in order to drive an economy through innovation. So we're playing a leading role in innovation in Canada through regional activities, local systems of innovation, and in the role of having a national system of innovation. And finally, we're committed to being more entrepreneurial, adopting an aggressive entrepreneurial approach to the commercialization and the commercialization of technology and the transfer of our knowledge to society and to industry. The vision really reaffirms that first and foremost we're an R&D organization, but it also emphasizes partnerships with like-minded organizations in the private and the public sector, and stresses that strategic research can contribute significantly to technological advancement and wealth creation. So we not only work closely, we work in a different way with partners than we've done in the past. We've abandoned what I can describe as a toss-it-over-the-fence theory of technology transfer, because that didn't produce the desired results. Too often, of course, when you toss something over the fence, there's nobody on the other side to grab it and run with it. So the fence had to come down. We found that the process of technology transfer works very much better when you involve partners in the process from the very beginning of the exercise, right at the stage of project definition, and then from there you go on and build a truly collaborative partnership. Now, we've also found that not one collaboration model works in all cases, so we try to choose a mechanism that best suits the areas, the area of research and the needs of the industrial sector or the organization which it serves. I've listed here a number of types of interactions, mechanisms, if you wish, that we employ in collaborative projects. There are genuine collaborative research projects where there might be one or more partners. There are facilities-based partnerships. These are generally based around unique major scientific or engineering equipment, which is too expensive, too large for any individual firm or any university to purchase by itself. Collaborative research centers are also listed here. These bring together equipment and researchers from a variety of partners, generally speaking in NRC laboratory space. In another type of collaboration, we provide research and development assistance and a conducive environment for startup companies in incubation facilities. And we have, we're currently building at this point in time, two incubators, one in Montreal and one in our campus in Ottawa. There are also consortia partnerships where each player brings a particular strength to a project, and those players can be large companies, small companies, government labs, universities. And finally, we've developed a capability in special interest groups as another effective means of transferring technology. So I'm going to touch on some of these specifically, as well as some of the other programs by other organizations in the federal government. And I'll use, particularly quite new examples from information and telecommunications areas if possible. So I'm going to start off with the solid-state optoelectronics consortium. This is one of two that I've talked about in the IIT area. This is perhaps one of the most successful consortium that MRC has put together, the Solid State Optoelectronics Consortium. This was a first for us, and it actually took 3 years of working to solicit buy-in from venture partners and to define the sanctions of the parameters of the consortium. From the beginning, we felt that it should be industry-driven and that it should encompass both major players, such as Nortel and small and medium enterprises.
And this was one of the, of course, the unique features of this, because the IT field in Canada tends to be dominated, or was dominated, by a few major R&D performers. The motivations, of course, and the needs of small and medium-sized companies are quite different. And SSOC led industry to redefine its culture of competition in order to be able to work together and produce useful results. So after these 3 years of negotiating, the Solid State Optoelectronics Consortium was incorporated as a not-for-profit R&D consortium in 1988, and it began operations in 1989. It was established as an open industrial consortium with support from NRC and from participation and with the participation of other government and university labs. The mission was to create a Canadian capability in integrated optoelectronics research for applications in the information industry. The specific technology that the consortium selected to focus on was wavelength division multiplexing. In other words, the technology to enable the transmission of several wavelengths of light down an optical fiber without interference. These are the members of the consortium. You can see that it includes major players. At that time, it was Bell Northern Research, now Nortel. EG&G was also involved, National Defense, small company called MPR Teltech, a not-for-profit lab organization, TR Labs, small companies, the Communications Research Center, and the National Optics Institute in Quebec City. Now, this was obviously a complicated consortium. There were three membership grades: principal, senior, and associate member. And these membership distinctions were used to set fee levels and to define how the units would access the intellectual property. The SSOC intellectual property was royalty free for principal members. Senior members had royalty free access to the intellectual property for their internal use, but paid royalties for commercial exploitation. And associate members paid royalties at normal market rates. And of course, I don't need to tell you what the different fees were, but obviously they differed from top to bottom in that scene. The industrial members paid fees, while non-industrial research affiliates, such as the universities, contributed in kind research. The operating structure consisted of a board of directors, a steering committee, and a program head. It was managed and planned within a set of very well-defined objectives with regular milestones and monthly reviews. This is actually a slide of the receiver chip for the wavelength division multiplexing project, the chip that was developed as a result of the project. And as I mentioned, the consortium members wanted to acquire the technology and skills necessary to integrate multiple photonic and electronic devices on a single chip. They believed, as it turned out, rightly so, that they could achieve a very significant market advantage through the early application of integrated optoelectronic technology. It also, incidentally, had a major advantage for SMEs in that it helped develop niche technologies which the small to medium enterprises themselves could pick up as a business that the big companies like Nortel were not interested in. And in fact, some of those companies have developed niche markets as a result. The consortium provided a number of key links to university research and the expertise that the universities had. It enabled the transfer of know-how and established a two-way flow of technology and assistance between member organizations. Obviously, SSOC achieved its major technical goals with its advances in wavelength division multiplexing. It was actually very successful as a model for collaboration between industry, government, and universities. In fact, it was so successful that its five-year mandate was continued for a second year. And you might ask, why did it only run a total of 6 years? Well, one of the requirements for a good working partnership arrangement is a well-defined technical focus. And SSOC's technical focus revolved around technologies that actually, towards the end, developed so rapidly that they entered the commercial arena by the end of the term of the consortium. And efforts are now underway to incorporate those technologies in the products of Nortel, Newbridge, and some other players. Now, another consortium which began towards the end of that SSOC project looked at new applications of photonic technology, specifically multiprocessors for communications. And although we were able to build on the experience we'd had with SSOC, this consortium called OPCOM still took 3 years to put together. In fact, it took a full year and 17 rounds of legal talks just to deal with the intellectual property rights. So the three P's, patience, persistence, and perseverance, were certainly needed in order to get this off the ground. OPCOM was actually developed as a joint initiative of the Ottawa Carleton Research Institute and NRC, and as a federally incorporated not-for-profit organization. It started in 1994 as a five-year, $20 million pre-competitive research venture, and it was supported by funding from Industry Canada's Strategic Technologies Program. OPCOM's goals, it was for members to collaborate in mutually beneficial ways to develop an experimental optoelectronic real-time processor for use in high-speed distributed computing and image processing, and to build a practical testbed for advanced photonic systems and subsystems. There are currently 10 members in OPCOM, and we anticipate that more partners will be added. There were a number of thorny IP problems, as I've mentioned. How did the organization solve these problems? Well, basically, the members agreed that intellectual property would stay with the originating company, but the company could not refuse to license to other members at reasonable cost, in other words, market rates. Now, some might argue that that defeated the purpose of a consortium, but in fact, that would only be the case if the consortium's only purpose was to generate IP. There are still 2 years to go on this project, but it's already shown a number of tangible results. Several companies in the consortium have developed prototype products, and a few have actually gone to market. For example, Dynatech, which is here, Dynatech, have an Infinity storage disk on the market, and some of the others have also got products that are either close or actually in the marketplace. Now, it's perhaps a bit optimistic to say that the ultimate goal, which was the processor itself, will be achieved within this time frame, but it's clear that there have been a lot of benefits of pulling this group together, ensuring that there's a good working relationship between the partners. And I think it's fair to say that if this consortium hadn't come together, these companies and these organizations wouldn't necessarily have been talking to one another. So from that point of view, it was a significant success. Now, my next example is a partnership that's resulted in a significant contribution to the R&D infrastructure in Ottawa, in the National Capital Region. The environmentalists have a slogan, work locally, think globally, and that could very easily reflect the philosophy of the Ottawa Carleton Research Institute. OCRI, as it's called, is again a not-for-profit, member-supported initiative working to accelerate the growth of a world-class technology infrastructure within the Ottawa-Carleton region. One of its efforts was to promote high-tech development. One of its efforts to promote high-tech development in this region was OCRINET. OCRINET provides and manages the first ATM broadband network in Canada dedicated to research and development. It provides a development and proving ground for new ATM network equipment, services, and applications. It's again a partnership between industry, government, and educational institutions. It's a closed network in the sense that it's accessible only to approved members, but membership in the consortium is available to any organization with a legitimate research need related to the mission and objectives of OCRINET. So pre-commercial applications and service development activities are both allowed within this network. Now, in addition to providing its partners with a network of research nodes connected via high-speed data communications links, OCRI is intended to improve the understanding of the design, management, costing, and use of ATM broadband networks. OCRI manages and administers OCRINET to assist the research community in developing related technology and products, and has been very influential in this region of Ottawa. Now, let me move on now to another type of partnership, the NRC Special Interest Group. We've had a lot of success with this idea. It's been mainly developed at our Institute for Industrial Materials in Boucherville, Quebec, and the concept is about 11 years old. IMI, the Industrial Materials Institute, decided that special interest groups could provide industry input to pre-competitive R&D and would help also to give our own, that is the Materials Institute, research programs direction and impact by working with the private sector. In fact, I believe that today IMI is one of only 8 research organizations in the world which has a highly defined program of special interest groups of the magnitude that we have. Now, the members here benefit from direct access to R&D results They also benefit from information on the latest trends and developments in the particular area. They have access to facilities, to training, to software, and to technical assistance. NRC benefits, of course, because the industry participation helps us to set priorities for research and leads, of course, also to specific research partnerships that we'd like. Membership is relatively straightforward here. The members pay a fee, and they put effort, time, and in-kind contributions into pre-competitive R&D projects that are jointly reviewed and approved by all of the members, and the members share in the benefits. This is an indication of the six interest groups we have. The companies that are involved range from large companies to SMEs. They cover a range of areas from injection molding and die casting to surface technologies in the resource and aerospace sector. For example, Pat, can you go back? No? SurfTech here, the surface technologies and resources and aerospace sector. This is a special interest group to which Syncrude belongs, Pratt & Whitney belongs, for example, Orenda. So there are both very large and medium-sized companies involved in this one. Some of the others are principally small to medium enterprises. The next slide shows I'm not sure that you can see this too well, but it shows a photograph of an injection molding system that we have at our Industrial Materials Institute. Now, recruiting new members and bringing groups together in this way is a very labor-intensive, time-consuming effort. But it's actually in the process of defining and forming a group with special needs that has enabled our Industrial Materials Institute to stay in touch with the needs of industry and the markets in which these firms operate. And as of 1996, about 150 technology transfers which have helped the companies develop new processes and products have taken place in the context of these special interest groups. So we consider this to be a very effective way of working in certain areas, and we can recommend it. Now, I didn't want to give you the impression that NRC was the only organization in Canada which has strong partnership programs and is very much involved in collaborations, because that certainly isn't the case. So I want to specifically mention the Natural Sciences and Engineering Research Council, ENSA, because some of the programs here have been very innovative. Other countries are beginning to copy some of the things that NSERC's done. NSERC is the federal instrument for making strategic investments in university research and development. And it has a number of elements to its partnership programs. The Strategic Research Grants Program, for example, about $40 million. University industry projects, including industrial research chairs, which I'll come back to. Okay, industrial research chairs are included in there. The networks of centers of excellence, I'll mention that in a minute. The Technology Partnerships Program, which was designed to specifically tackle the innovation gap, in that it provides funding to companies and to universities to take R&D developments to the point where they are commercial for a company, invest in that gap, in other words. A relatively new program called Research Networks. And this altogether represents an expenditure annually of about $112 million. The Industrial Research Chairs program, the purpose of that is to help universities build on their existing strengths to reach the critical mass needed to pursue major research efforts in areas of special interest to industry. It can also help develop in the universities research in fields which has not yet been exploited, but for which there appears to be an industrial need. The chairs, of course, which most of you will know about, are a cost-shared venture between NSERC and industry. The program provides the salary for a senior researcher and for associate junior researchers for 5 years, along with research program funding. And of course, industry has to provide both cash and in-kind contributions. The interesting statistic here is that in the 12 years since their inception, the Industrial Research CHEERS program has made 181 awards totaling $161 million. The number of chair holders is actually 236 over that period, and the industrial commitment is $148 million. Now, I think you can agree from that that this has been a significant program in ramping up industry's contribution to what is medium to long-term research. Let me move on to networks of centers of excellence. I think this is again another Canadian success story, which links researchers from universities, industry, and government in many parts of the country. The viability of the program perhaps was established when the province of Ontario set up its centers of excellence program in 1986, and that was a good experience with that. So the federal government then created a program of networks of centers of excellence, built upon that provincial concept, in other words, and launched the networks program in 1990. This year, on this budget, February budget, the decision was made by the federal government to continue the networks of centers of excellence program, putting another $47.4 million into the program per annum, and in fact ensuring that this would continue, because the money is not for a term, but is actually part of the A base of NSERC. So the Networks of Centers of Excellence is now a continuing program as part of the research base. And of course, you know that the three granting councils, NSERC, MRC, and SSHRC, the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council, are involved, and also the Federal Department of Industry Canada is involved in supporting and overseeing the networks. Now, I think I want to emphasize the importance of the achievements of the networks of centers of excellence. I think they have clearly played a major role in developing and training and retaining world-class scientists and engineers in areas that are crucial to Canada. Many people believe that, in fact, the principal benefit of technology transfer is the transfer of people. The networks have also concentrated their efforts on managing multidisciplinary, multi-sectoral research programs, which are national in scope. And as a result, each network really is a multidisciplinary, multi-sectoral program in which there's collaboration between top people around the country. To give you an example, the Federal Network on Protein Engineering links 260 scientists and students from 13 universities and four government labs. The teams are not only pursuing leading-edge research in the area, they are also working with industry to create commercial opportunities out of the results, and I'll say a little bit about those. Let me just... there are 14 networks in these technology areas. I won't say too much about that. Can we move on, Pat? In terms of the impact, the networks have had an impact in a number of ways. From the existing centers of excellence, 35 spin-off companies with 35 spin-off companies with 143 employees have been formed as a direct result of NCE programs. That's a small number of employees per company, but they are mostly startups. One of those companies, founded in 1995 in Ottawa, was created to commercialize results coming out of the Canadian Genetics Disease Network for the treatment of cancer and HIV. The first fully commercialized product from the Mechanical Wood Pulps Network, a fiber quality analyzer, now has sales of $3 million a year. There's one company that is grown out of Concrete Canada, another network, which has doubled its staff to over 100 during the period of the existence of the network. So there's clearly evidence that these networks of centers of excellence are being effective. As one final example, and this illustrates the impact on training, I think, the Canadian Institute for Telecommunications Research, CITR, has helped build a Canadian expertise base by producing over 100 graduates over the last 2 years. These are students trained in the university labs. And CITR calculates that a six-month decrease in the learning curve of new employees going into the IIT sector produces savings of over $3 million a year annually for the companies that are involved. So these programs do have a significant benefit. I'd like to move on now to another partnership program that we established last year. This is an NRC NSERC research partnership program jointly funded by NRC and NSERC. We considered NRC to be a very important component of our efforts to develop and strengthen our linkages with universities and research groups around the country in areas of common interest. It's helping us to renew our intellectual resources at NRC, and it also provides an opportunity for us in our institutes to explore with the universities frontier areas of science and technology which we may be able to invest in the years ahead. It's a $25 million program over 5 years. We identified jointly with NSERC a number of objectives: building three-way linkages, university, NRC institutes, industry. We hope that it'll bring new knowledge and technology in fields of current and future national interest. It also provides our partners, principally the universities, but also industry, with access to unique NRC facilities and expertise, and it's contributing to the training of highly qualified people. To date, to give you an idea of what we've accomplished here, it's brought together over the two competitions we've had to date 41 companies, 18 universities, and 14 NRC research institutes working on complementary and collaborative projects. I'll just give you one example of one of these projects. This is an NRC-NSERC research partnership project involving Nortel, Mitel Semiconductor in Beaumont, Genom Corporation in Burlington, Carleton University, and our Institute for Microstructural Sciences, and it's on silicon germanium photonic devices. The areas of strategic importance, because silicon germanium extends the range of systems devices beyond silicon, particularly for applications, for example, in the area of wireless communications. So this study will determine the basic optical properties of silicon germanium layers for potential use in optoelectronic integrated circuits. It allows the participants to pool their resources in state-of-the-art facilities, and it's a unique opportunity because NRC has the only silicon germanium fabrication facilities in Canada, and it has the only facility in North America outside of IBM. So you can see that this is a pretty unique opportunity. Associated with this is really a facilities-based partnership, and I want to mention this as an example of that kind of program. This partnership is built around a unique piece of state-of-the-art equipment and the silicon germanium chemical vapor deposition facility is what this is based on. It started out some years ago as experimental long-range research at NRC, and I think NRC has been recognized as one of the top four or five institutes and facilities in the world working in this particular area. And we knew that to keep abreast of developments in this field, after some publications or some patents that IBM took out, that it was going to require an investment. So we got together with Northern Telecom at the time, persuaded them that this was an opportunity. They contributed $400,000 towards, they contributed significantly, I'm not sure of the exact number, towards the cost of acquisition of this equipment. We also persuaded the NSERC to provide access to the university community to this facility, and NSERC put some money into it. So we set up, are also involved. The initial research involves 9 investigators from Victoria, the University of Toronto, the University of Waterloo, the University of Ottawa, and the Université de Montréal and Acadia. The university researchers are the principal research investigators. They're supplemented by NRC staff, and the industrial researchers they provide guidance, advice, and information on the specific domain, and they also participate in the research. Membership in the consortium is open to any Canadian organization prepared to contribute direct funding for university software research, and as well as in-kind efforts of its research personnel needed to address the problems. And the companies are expected also to provide access to their software for the team. So the objectives of CESA remained consistent since the early 1993 discussions, namely that it focuses on university research and education on software engineering problems relative to the industry, and secondly that it improves competence in software engineering amongst university graduates through relevant educational programs, and helps develop software professionals through the dissemination of research results. I don't think I've got time to tell you too much about how it works, but there is a research director and an operations manager, and NRC provides a demonstration center for the projects at our site. NSERC's contributing $3 million to the project, and the combined industry, government, and university effort is valued at $18 million over a 5-year period. So it's a very substantial consortium. There's a board of directors associated with the management, and also a program director. The initial theme, incidentally, for the CESA program was empirical evolution from legacy code to modern architectures, and the consortium is planning to have 3 themes by, I think, the middle of the program. Each theme has approximately 5 complementary and interacting research projects. I'm going to finish off by very quickly mentioning OVITES. This is an interesting pilot program. It came about as a result of a recognition that there's a dramatic shortage of people in the computer science software engineering area in Ottawa, said to be 2,000 jobs at the present time, and not enough university graduates to actually provide qualified personnel for the information technology and telecommunications industry. So the idea that we developed, that was NRC, the 2 universities in Ottawa and Mitel, was a pilot in which we would take graduate scientists and engineers who were not software engineers, not computer scientists, but who were intellectually skilled, into a program of 16 months, 2 terms at universities, 2 terms at Mitel, paid a course at Mitel, paying fees, full fees at the 2 universities. During that period, they would be reskilled. It's a reskilling program for graduates. The program was advertised in 1 newspaper for 3 days, attracted thousands of inquiries. 430 people applied for the program. We had great difficulty actually getting the people, the number down to 60, because there were so many highly qualified people in that bunch of people. It was reduced to 25, and eventually we selected 10 people. some mechanical engineers, some civil engineer. There was a physicist, a chemist, even a psychologist. So this was a broad-based group of people who are being reskilled. They've gone through their first term at university. All of them have come through with flying colors. They're tops in the class. And all this illustrates is that, you know, there is a pool of resource out there that could be taken advantage of by the ITT industry if, in fact, companies were provided, were prepared to put some training into it. We hope to be able to upgrade that pilot program to 50 people in September with more companies involved. So this OV test program looks as if it's going to be a success. If I can just pass on to the lessons learned from partnerships, a number of lessons that that one can pick up from this. First of all, each partnership needs to be tailored to suit the needs of the participants. It's very important that you spend a lot of time tailoring the particular program. Some of the criteria, well, consultation is obviously critical. Working level discussions between the potential partners are needed to define the needs and expectations, and the objectives have to be very clearly articulated. Planning and management is obviously important. Assessing performance on a continuing basis, a good management structure with people's roles and responsibilities well defined. There has to be clearly a good agreement on deliverables, confidentiality, intellectual property, licensing and royalties, etc. A recognition that that research collaborations are not static but the dynamic, and successful in successful ones you need to keep the lines of communication open at all stages. Flexibility is a hallmark of productive associations between industry, government and universities. Partnerships should be flexible enough to permit participation based on competencies and commitment and not, for example, the size of the company. I mentioned that Canada has a good track record. And I think that if we continue to be flexible, support what works, and build on opportunities, this has really been a good way to expand Canadian R&D capabilities. I think the greatest lesson here, though, is when you're confronted with novel situations and untried possibilities, don't say it can't be done. Say rather, it's never been done, but we're going to do it. So that's a lesson I think we can all take. So thank you very much.